Well, hey, everybody, this is Dave. I hope the reception is okay. In Texas, as you may have seen, we have no electricity, so I have no internet or no heat. I know clearly now which I can live longer without, and it's not the internet. So I probably in the last couple of days have not responded to some of you, but I do want to thank you for those of you who have responded days before that, for your kind words and the questions and responses. I want to respond just a bit to three or four questions about sharing a little bit of my experience with writing. I'm always reluctant to do that because it's not something I would recommend that you mimic or use another person as a model, but I'll be happy to share that. Let me ask you, if you would mute if you're not about to speak, because your microphone is picking up paper movement and shuffling, and we'll go on lecture mode in just a bit, but I want to have a discussion. So any thoughts or questions or clarifications first before I do just a brief share from the first couple of seminars or anything that you want to report or add or ask? Anyone? Is Michael with us?
Yes, I'm here, Dave.
Hey, well, would you maybe pick one of the questions you had and mention it? You mentioned about there were three or four areas, I thought, all of which are really important. I wish we had time to explore it. Michael mentioned about grounding and centering and asked if I used a mindfulness meditation. I do. I'll be happy to share that. It has a particular usefulness. You're going to hear about another kind of looking at getting focused and in flow that we're going to talk about with the use of a mantra. And I have an example. It's from performance science, but it's an example of what might be applicable. So is there anything else you wanted to highlight or mention or ask Michael? I'm operating from an iPhone, so that's all I've got in front of me, and that's it. So is there anything else from what you said you wanted to mention?
No, I'm interested that you have a meditation practice, because clearly, at least the way I interpreted your notes, what you were describing was meditation in terms of, you know, sort of centering and, Do you do that before you sit down to write, or is it just a sort of a separate deal?
It's a separate deal.
Okay.
What I do before I receive a call from a client, which is most of what I do, or before I sit down to do a seminar like this, or to write, I do a mantra. And I'm going to circle back to that and talk about it, and talk about how easy and quick it is, because it's the same kind of prep for a keynote address back in the day. Remember when those happened live? Or you want to get in focus and in flow for to the exact specific state of mind, as you also mentioned, for what that task is. So we're going to talk about that in just a bit. So thanks for those comments and questions.
Sure.
Anyone else, anything that you'd like to talk about just briefly before we move into discussion? Well, since some of you asked, I want to do it while we are on open mic here and just share just a little bit about your question about what I do to write. First of all, I'll share a way with you that I do research. Some of you have heard this already. Many of you have heard it. And how I go about synthesizing, integrating different disciplines in the work that I do, because that's paramount for me. For research, I have over a couple of dozen Google alerts that show me in an email on a daily basis anything in the world literature related to the topic, from what I want to do, research articles, to books, to popular writing, and I supplement that with interviews and various things that are applications. So an example of a couple of Google search items, and remember to put them in parentheses so that you'll get that as a unit, neuroeconomics, behavioral economics, peak performance, whatever you want to scan for that day in the world literature, from articles to journal articles to books and blogs, you're going to get an abstract and a link, and you can see if it's of interest. For example, for the offering I just launched, the NeuroMentor Institute of Peak Performance Training, there are 3 playbooks and 7 recorded webinars that apply the mind and brain sciences to peak performance. So I spent about 3 years doing work to prepare for that in performance science, various related aspects, sports and executive mentoring, Navy SEAL training, social psychology concepts like framing, influence, and persuasion, neural marketing, cognitive and research psychology, just to name a few, as well as a number of interviews. So to give you a more specific example of what my process is like, for each of the 21 essays in engaging the ineffable toward mindfulness and meaning, I read a number of books related to the topics, psychology, philosophy, science, literature, in order to then synthesize a perspective that would be a unique integration of all of these applied to coaches, because these were white papers initially for the coaches who did the licensed specialty certification training with, but in my own voice. So everything has to be in my voice for me for it to be authentic. So I do this best in an immersion. My best and most sustained immersion is the month that I spend in the 300-year-old Creole home and cottage in the French Quarter for several weeks each fall, reading books during the day, moving to the courtyard for the latter part of the day to start dictating and end up with a rough draft. So, and I do it all by dictation. I have a dictation device wherever I am, and I just capture it. And then I get it transcribed by idictate.com. And when I get it back, I stack them into stacks that I may call chapters. So this is something that is useful to me. I use the dictation device because I envision my audience, whether it's a person or a group, and I'm talking to them. It keeps it very experience near. Now, here's an example of perseverance. Remember I mentioned a buddy of mine, Janine Rolfe, who has never released anything for publication before she's edited it 30 times. And she's had numerous New York Times bestsellers, a couple of them number one. So that's perseverance in one thing. Here's another. A very good friend of mine has written a number of books, New York Times, Wall Street Journal bestsellers. Several years ago, I flew to Massachusetts to drive to a picturesque part of the state for his wedding. I'll take any excuse to visit my daughter and granddaughters in Boston. So he was writing his first thriller novel, beginning maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I wanted to share just a couple of insights about this. Actually, he spent 5 years writing it, including doing research by spending a few days on an aircraft carrier, since his novel is a thriller, a spy novel, set entirely on an aircraft carrier. His initial draft, 152,000 words. He hired a highly recommended writing consultant in the UK who sent him a 25-page single-space detailed review, and he spent months condensing it to a second draft of 129,000 words. sent it to a literary agent, someone we both shared. She read it and said it needed to be leaner, cleaner, tighter, and then he got it down to 120,000 words. Then she nudged him again down to 100,000 words. He submitted draft 4, just under 100,000 words, and let me know a couple of days ago he has a book deal from his first choice publisher, a 2-book deal, his manuscript, and a sequel. And I plan to be involved as a film consultant for a particular aspect of a primary character that we sort of co-created. So this is exciting stuff, but just to let you know the role of work of rewriting, of editing. And it takes perseverance and resilience to do what it takes to get to where you want to go. So have that clearly in mind and get ready to do the work that you want and need to do. Now, what you do will be very different, but I just want to share a couple of different ways of doing things, emphasizing you'll have your own. Okay, I want to move into our lecture mode now because I want to reserve some time at the end if you have questions or comments. Okay, we're going to talk about the science and really the neuroscience of writing. First, your comfort zone. To write and then to publish your first book, you're going to have to leave your comfort zone. A comfort zone is simply a familiar pattern of behavior. It's a gradual process initially, but once established, resists change. Think of a comfort zone like your home thermostat. An increase or decrease in room temperature when they work, which of course mine doesn't now, I'm not having electricity, it will trigger a return to the set point, the comfort zone. Our minds and our brains both contribute to maintenance of our comfort zone. We return to the familiar even when we don't like it or when it's uncomfortable. In other words, this is simply the way the brain works. Once we do something a number of times, the brain grooves a pathway to make it the default mode so we don't have to think about it. That is the comfort zone. Whether it works or not, it's still what you return to. So it can be a repeated role you play in a relationship, a repeated pattern, like procrastinating about making needed, not lifestyle changes. It can take various forms, for example. Bargaining with yourself about seriously writing or really completing your book within a specific period of time. In the beginning, departure from a comfort zone can feel, by definition, uncomfortable. It's a rupture of continuity. A routine is broken. You're busting your own story. Remember that a habit is not a definition. It's simply a choice that gets repeated. And anytime, again, you want to change a habit, create a new one, or just create any change, focus on the system, not just the goal, because everybody has the same goal. So when we write a new story and change our minds, we actually change our brains and the software that is the blueprint of our behavior. Now, even something as simple, like the money you make, operates in a similar way. When you get more successful, it may feel uncomfortable, different. Here's an example of a comfort zone in action. Most lottery winners manage to spend or give away their newfound earnings to return to their previous situation, their comfort zone. In the U.S., just over 80% of lottery winners file bankruptcy within the first 5 years after they win. A comfort zone is an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and brain. A blind spot is by definition something you don't see until you have insight, look at it, understand it, and decide what change you want to create. Your mind can reframe, your brain can rewire. So one possibility here, make a habit of writing. Construct a schedule and be loyal to that schedule. So let's talk about framework now. Remember we discussed how you frame something determines how you're going to proceed. A simple example, again, is our brains can't tell the difference between excitement and anxiety. How you frame it determines whether you're going to proceed or whether you're going to retreat. How we frame something determines the whole mindset of how we're going to go about something. One of the more recent books I've read by George Lakoff, the book says everything I want to say about it. The title of the book is Don't Think of an Elephant. Think about how that frames things. Think about those of you who have played Taboo. You see the word you want your partner without doing gestures or goofy articulate, just by saying a word or two to guess that word. There are six words that you cannot say because they make it too easy. It's really hard, if you know from playing this, once you've seen those six words, to not think about those and to think about something else again. So each meaning and each frame is yours to construct. It's not there until you create it. A simple example. Well, guys, I have too much going on right now to find time to write. Reframed, I have too much going on right now not to create specific scheduled time to write. It's a way I take care of myself. So for those of you who do coaching, it's exactly what you do in coaching. Instead of a problem or a dead end or a stuckness, what's the opportunity here? What's the challenge? Your response, your perception of an experience and a meaning you attribute to it is a bridge between an external event and your internal state. So to determine meaning, you provide the context to surround it. The frame can determine your state of mind. The reticular activating system at the base of the brain decides what's allowed into consciousness out of all the information streaming into the brain. For example, right now, pay attention to your feet. Focus specifically on how your feet feel as you move your feet back and forth on the floor. Wiggle your toes, that you're aware of the shoes you're wearing. Your feet have been there all along, but you cue your reticular activating system to attend to your feet, and you get this feedback. You pay attention to whatever fits your story, the framework you use. Now, let's apply this to see how we can use it for the story of your book. For example, part of your life story is your self-image. If somebody says something really nice about you that you don't believe, it won't register, or you'll disavow it with an internal comment like, eh, what are they trying to sell me? Natural filters include beliefs, self-image, and goals. So how do you reframe? How do you reprogram your reticular activating system and your mindset to let in what you want to achieve with your book? So here's a key to this discussion. Your book outline is more than your blueprint and plan. It's your frame. When you start writing about something specific, examples of it begin to appear. It's as if the universe is conspiring to help you achieve your goal. Yellow Jeeps begin appearing. You can't get away from them. I first had a series of experiences as a psychoanalyst that I have now in mentor coaching. My patients then, who were therapists or psychoanalysts in training, would notice as soon as they worked through a particular issue and came to terms with it, that suddenly half a dozen of their own patients would bring up the same issue they just dealt with. And they always thought it was amazing. The patients had unconsciously taken a number from their therapist or analyst, patiently waited until it was their turn. And they could sense when it was time, when their therapist was ready to deal with it. Now, those of you who are professional coaches no doubt have noticed this and will notice the same thing with your clients. They'll wait for you to get your arms around something so then you can help them with it. Now, as authors, you're going to notice the same thing, and it'll pertain to what you're writing. For example, suddenly, in the first few months after the release of my book, The Secret Language of Money, along with beginning a licensed specialty certified training program for financial coaches and professionals, my clients began giving me illustrations. Their money stories were there at center stage, needing to be coached. That's what the law of attraction tells us. Whatever you focus on, you're going to notice and bring about. And actually, I noticed it in the preparation of the book, which added to the preparation. So here's a three-step combination to reframe and incorporate your new endeavor. One, visualization. You can create powerful and stimulating internal images. Visualizations actually reprogram the brain when you repeat them, because the same brain activation occurs when you imagine something as when you actually see it, and it comes in through the optic nerve. So to allow yourself to be creative, you have to lose the fear of being wrong. So affirmations then will be helpful. They're the story that support your visualization. This is revising mind software while you rewire your brain. Affirmations are the positive validation of doing and being what you want. These are the stories that frame and support the visualization. Two, change your behavior to precisely what you want. You don't get it just by visualizing it. It's not ask, believe, and receive like in The Secret. It's ask, believe, create, the ABCs. New behavior and new experience creates new pathways in the brain. There's a white paper on my website under articles that's like second or third down that's called The Neuroscience of The Secret. Basically, I just saved you from reading it, but if you if you'd like to look at it a little bit more. With each repetition, the pathways become a bit more deeply etched. As soon as they're well grouped, you have a new habit, an automatic behavior, the default mode that you don't have to think about. So your future self lives in your present mind. If you clearly visualize that future self, then you can move ahead to actualize that vision. And here's the add-on secret. So does your book. So this is why it's important that you do not make brain changes permanent unless you incorporate them into your story. Because think about how that works in coaching. You work with clients, they create changes, they do different behavior. Unless you help them incorporate that into the model of how and who they are, their identity, they're going to revert back to the previous behavior. Identity is the most powerful force in the human psyche, and we always return to it. That's why it has to be revised and reprogrammed as part of the changes that someone's making, now too with your book and with being an author. So the key elements here, repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly, or they'll be eliminated. Two, conscious incorporation of this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of yourself so you don't lose the vision. And third, specificity about the experience of having achieved the goal. And this is where visualization can crystallize possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it. Here's a simple example. Some of you have heard this before from me. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During this time, he decided to not go crazy. He was going to envision golfing. It was his favorite sport. He was an average weekend golfer. He had shot under 100 twice. He had 299s. Everything else was in triple digits. But he decided every day he was going to spend his day visualizing. So he imagined getting up, putting on his clothes, driving to his favorite course, warming up, smelling the whole experience, shooting, walking to the ball. Every day, he spent about 7 hours visualizing playing golf. He did this for 7 years. And then finally, when he was released from captivity after playing golf 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, He shot a 74. The power of a vision, mind over matter. Now, let's look at what we were talking about with Michael in the beginning, about states of mind. And this is important to enter the state of mind of creativity or the specific state that you want for exactly the kind of writing you're doing. So let's talk about this concept, because it's not linear, it's more systemic. We enter and exit states of mind fluidly and invisibly, kind of like the precision passage of the baton between relay team members. Each of us has a whole set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, creativity, centered attention. A state of mind is a psychophysiological state, an internally organized software program that has its own set of expectations, attitudes, meanings, feelings. It's really like a distinct software program. So from an infinite sea of stimuli, the unique software package of each state determines what we perceive, actually, and then once input, how we process it. So a key element is our awareness of our different states of mind in order to know what state works best and a way to regulate that. For example, creative writing and editing, two ends of a spectrum, require different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. Brainstorming, completing a project, different states of mind. The regulation of feelings and states of mind involves the understanding and mastery of each of your different states of mind. Here are some examples of how artists and authors enter their own creative state to fit an intended work. They need a Sitwell would lie in the stale solitude of an open coffin as a prelude to entering the state of mind she needed to write her macabre literature. Dr. Samuel Johnson and the poet W.H. Auden did a continuous state of stimulation by constantly consuming tea, as they wrote. Willa Cather read her Bible to set the right tone to the right. George Sand went immediately from making love to writing. Voltaire used his lover's back for a writing desk. Benjamin Franklin and one of my favorite authors, Diane Ackerman, write in a bathtub, in a warm bath, a warm bubble bath, with a pine plank extended across it. Coleridge used opium before each scene of writing. The painter Turner liked to be lashed to the mast of a ship and taken for a sail during an incredible storm and then come back and immediately recreate his experience on canvas. Some authors play a piece of music repetitively during the course of writing to create an emotional framework to house their evolving story. The corresponding state of the mind of the reader then often matches with that of the author. The author guides the reader to that state of mind through the senses, the music and voice of the words, the texture of imagery, the rhythm of feelings. Each of us has a continuum state with some level of awareness of what state works best for what endeavor, even of how to enter and exit different states. We become aware of what works best for a particular endeavor, like a creative one, what works better for conceptual planning. So a key to remaining in flow, in this performance flow, is to be sure you know how to enter it, how to sustain it, so that there's not interruptions, disruptions, so that you're entirely in charge of it. And that's why, for example, I can get more done in 5 weeks, and that immersion in the Creole cottage than I can the remainder of the year, even with a great setup at my ranch on weekends and dedicating just a part of each day. So it's that immersion that does it. So let's talk about more specifically how to regulate states of mind. The most important thing we can do to achieve success is to manage our emotions and regulate states of mind. A couple of recent articles in Harvard Business Review and Scientific American Mind found that the most common success factor for executives was self-awareness and the regulation of states of mind. Now, that finding, because they only measured executives, I would say that's the case for everybody. So, what do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind in a sustained way, using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotion can lead to significant compromises. So there are two primary ways to regulate a state of mind. Focus, what and how you focus on, and physiology, how you use your body. There are a couple of exercises in the outline of how to do this, how to get centered in your body. But here's a simple way of doing this. And I want to give you an example first of how it's going to look in practice. And then we'll talk a little bit about it. And I'm going to refer you to a resource that I think will bring it alive even more so for coaching. So here's an example. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage. That was lowest in their division nationwide. During practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot, a 3 or 4 word phrase, a focus phrase, and he suggested something like relaxed and smooth. And then a deep breath to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. He suggested they cue that focus phrase and relaxation with something that fit in the flow of what they were doing. So each player would dribble twice while they were saying that focus phrase, which aligned the energy field of the brain, and then the relaxation of breathing in and breathing out. And then he simulated game conditions by suddenly in the middle of practice blowing a whistle and having them go to the free shot line, shoot 2 free throws. And if they made them both, they got a break. If they missed one, they'd do 4 laps. So in 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. So a mantra has 3 components, the cue, the focus, and the physiology. You can see more about that and in the mentor coaching case that I first hatched the notion of this idea of a neural conditioning chart. You can see that and hear that on the free webinar on the homepage of MentorPath called Master States of Mind. And I would say download, there's an outline, but look especially at the neural conditioning chart, because it's a way to identify any emotional trigger. And then as soon as you identify the trigger and the usual response, the negative self, whatever the usual response is, it's in a time capsule because it'll never change. And then especially to develop a mantra, a cue, a focus, a physiology, and have an ideal behavior. Now, for writing or for anything you want to do, you can already know what this is going to be. So here's the secret. When you develop a cue, a focus, and the physiology and repeat it, simply the cue alone will boot up the state that's ideal for what you want. And I share in that webinar, mine is simply putting together the index finger and my thumb on both hands and touching them together for an infinity sign. Because I don't carry a basketball, and that's something I can do in a couple of seconds. And I've done it enough that I immediately have the state that I'm ready to do that keynote. Now, for other things, like if you want to go to sleep more effectively, you may want to use a different focus phrase, like relax to sleep. You may want to use a different cue, put your hand over your heart. You'll work it out, but when you repeat the cue enough with the same focus phrase and physiology, it will immediately boot up the state that you want. So let's look that, and mantras can not only, you don't want to get too calm. This is why mindfulness meditation may not work. I've, I've coached performance coaches who would get a team was all, you know, ready to go. He would get them relaxed, did a mindfulness meditation, and they'd go out there and get beat so bad. They were too relaxed. They weren't in an ideal peak performance state. So you got to match the state with the prep. So here's what we do for creativity. One is to get in flow. It's a state of heightened focus. It's one of the positive states that has to do with effectiveness and performance, being in a state of mind, focused, and to sustain that state. So here's some things that can interfere with this process. These are each obstacle, and every obstacle is a story you author to become aware of in order to redirect, reframe your energy into what you want. Here's how some of those obstacles can sound. Well, I'm going to wait until it's the right time. Well, I'm going to wait until I really have something to say. Or I'm going to wait until I have enough money to justify the time. Telling yourself it's too late. Being afraid of what family or friends might think. Thinking that an appointment with yourself for creative time is an indulgence or a luxury. So in the beginning, it's not about where you sit, what paper you use, what you write about. It's about beginning. In the beginning, your job is to begin. A recommendation. Consider integrating your writing into other professional activities. We've already discussed how you'll begin to hear vignettes and illustrations to capture. Here's another strategy. Write about what you're going to be writing about. If I'm working on a book, I only accept speaking engagements that are in the flow of what I'm writing about. But if you want to start writing, start a blog. Think about what you want to write about, how you want to brand and focus and direct the blog. And you'll begin to see all kinds of things bloggable. When I didn't do a blog. I avoided the blog because I thought that's what the world needs, one more unedited piece out there. Until McGraw-Hill nudged me before they released my book to start a blog. What I found was I found all kinds of things bloggable. It was so fascinating. The blogs in the next 3.5 years ended up being almost 50% of the sequel to that book. The first book was Sequel Length Money. The sequel was released a year and a half ago, Your New Money Story. And it was highly informative and helpful to a number of other people, and people knew some things they could talk about with me in coaching. So here are some things to think about. I want to reserve plenty of time to talk especially about this. If you have something like a choke or a slump or a block, it all gets to the state of mind that you either need to get into or sustain. Writer's block usually happens when the writer doesn't enter a state of mind to create. Access to the creative state seems blocked. If there's a choke or a choke prolonged over time, a slump, it's when you have lost the flow and get redirected or distracted into something else. So think about the importance of looking at how you want to focus, what you're going to do to sustain that focus. An example here, we choke when we think too much about something. A choke for an athlete, they're in a flow. If they for a nanosecond stop and think about something else, like somebody in the stands or an opposing player that gets to them, they lose the flow, and that's called a choke. We choke when pressure derails the usual processes we've learned so well that they're automatic. The most common cause of derailment, or actually the manifestation of derailment, is slowing down to think about something. moving from experiencer to observer, to think about it. Now, I'm talking about nanoseconds here. A couple of examples from one, an Olympic gymnast I was working with. She noticed, as we were looking at and deconstructing, whenever she did less than her usual perfect was when she looked for just 1 second to her primary opponent to see what she was doing and what she was doing to warm up. Another, about to go to Wimbledon, she was having difficulty with her serve. And we looked specifically at frame by frame what was happening. She then noticed as she tossed her ball in the air for a nanosecond, she thought about her coach, with whom she was very close, but they were having a little bit of difficulty, that she was wondering what her coach was thinking about the way she was tossing the ball. It takes only a second to get derailed when you're in the flow of things. So think about what you can do in writing to immerse yourself, to sustain that flow, and to get back on track when you get distracted. So the distractions are going to be inevitable, but find a way to get back on track very quickly. Here's an exercise that I'd suggest you think about. Morning pages. One way to foster this creativity initially is to do what Julia Cameron in The Artist's Way describes as morning pages. Morning pages are 3 pages of longhand writing done first thing in the morning, totally stream of consciousness. She emphasizes that there's no wrong way to do it, just write. Even if you can't think of anything to write, write anyhow. Write about what you can't write about. Don't edit or judge, just write. Remember, don't move from the playing field to the observer's platform. Don't move to an observer. Any change of state is going to activate that time capsule, and you know what's inside that. It's all the negative self-talk, the things that where you bargain with yourself, the excuses, the judgment, all that. That doesn't change. Listen to the master states of mind, and you'll hear in that second column, the usual behavior, usual response to an emotional trigger, it's always the same, no matter what. It's a time capsule by definition. So think about how you can enter that state. The morning pages are a primary tool to initiate and rediscovering your creativity. So here's a summary of the science, the neuroscience of writing. Since old patterns are hardwired, consistency of focus on new experiences is what it takes to change this wiring. How you frame it, the challenge, the opportunity, the excitement. Concentrate on new behavior, possibilities rather than problems or obstacles in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it. That's exactly what we don't do in coaching. Whenever, if you hook somebody up to an fMRI and they have an aha moment, a moment of insight, it activates 3 different parts in their brain, and they are vaulted to a state of integrated synthesis, creativity, new ways of thinking, information, a fact, looking at a problem, figuring out stuff, nothing happens. This is how some people get stuck in therapy, because going back into a problem etches it a bit further. Looking at possibilities creates new neuronal networks, new pathways, new activation in the brain. So regulating states of mind and managing emotion promotes brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual and emotional. And again, when you get diverted to an old feeling or behavior or thought, redirect immediately to the flow of the new ideas, what you're creating, the new story, the process of creative immersion and writing, plus back to the content of what you're writing, the discipline and work of writing, then ultimately becomes the discipline and work of rewriting, and ultimately your complete book. Remember, the power is in the focus, and that permanent change arises from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Challenges, opportunities, possibilities. That's what activates the brain. Focus aligns and directs energy and effort. Emphasize positive adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. And remember, knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. Remember we talked about putting it in an output channel because that completes the circuitry in the brain. Makes it a complete story. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self, about how new experiences will require thinking of yourself, your identity, in a new way, no longer in the old story. Here's how that sounds. I'm an author. Now, here's some inverse, I want to close with some inverse wisdom for authors. This is an homage to my mom, okay? this is an introduction to, it was in the introduction to Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual. When I came home from college after my freshman year and announced to my mom that I decided to major in psychology, we talked, she was excited for me. Then she mentioned that she'd made an A in her college psychology course. I said, I didn't know it. I didn't even know you took psychology. You must have really enjoyed it and studied a lot. She said, no, I just answered everything on the test exactly the opposite of what I thought it should be. Well, here's a list of 9 things that are the inverse of conventional wisdom for authors in honor of my mom, who thought it was all opposite anyway. 1, burn your bridges. Make it impossible to go back to an old habit or way of being. If you decide to quit postponing the completion of your book, make it impossible in some way to go back to postponing it. Create an uncomfortable scenario if you should slip back. Focus on the present without the limiting habit. In other words, the obstacle is there when you create it. Think about what you create if you use that energy to not create an obstacle. You're ready to consider the possibility of you creating an obstacle when you consider that you can have a way of not creating it. You create it, you don't create it. It's a new story. Focus on the present without the limiting habit. Reward yourself for proceeding and not going back. And even if you have writer's block, you don't get to go out and go jogging or go to the mall. Instead, you sit there. Remember Stephen King said, you don't wait for the muse to come. You sit at your desk at this appointed time, and the muse will find you. 2, do the opposite of what you normally do when you're afraid, worried, anxious, or uncomfortable or stuck. If you're uncomfortable with public speaking, avoidance is going to increase the fear. So do more of it. Embrace it. Join Toastmasters. You don't have to jump in the water because you can't learn to swim on paper. 3, obstacles reveal desires. Again, this is a repetition. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. So instead of figuring out a way to sidestep, overcome, or go around the obstacle, simply consider not creating it. And once again, say it even slightly, when you're ready to recognize that you create the obstacle, you're ready now to consider the possibility of not creating it. 4, discomfort can be a sign of progress. Moving beyond your comfort zone is necessary for progress. Comfortable is not a place you begin. It's not a prerequisite. It's not something you wait to happen. It's a place that you arrive. Moving from a comfort zone is where you begin. It's necessary in order to proceed. 5, lean into the unknown. If you wonder whether you can write and sell a book because you've never done it before, lean into the action of doing it. If you think you're too old to do something, you'll be right. You can tiptoe through life very carefully and arrive safely at death. 6, don't believe every thought you have. I'll never be able to write a book. thoughts lie a lot. They're like my Uncle Ted. No, God rest his soul, I have to use another example. You don't have to believe every thought that crosses your mind. You're not even stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. Remember Vincent van Gogh's sage advice. If you hear a voice say, I'm not a painter, then by all means paint. That voice is not. Seven. You do not attract what you want. You create what you focus on. Cue your radar for early recognition. Keep an eye open for yellow jeeps, stories, illustrations for your book, opportunities to talk about what you're writing about. A caveat. Talk about your subject, not the book you're writing. Talking about writing your book can dissipate the energy of writing. How many people do you know who have a book in them or have been working on my book for the last decade? Eight, you only see what you believe. I'll say that again. Some things have to be believed in order to be seen. And still differently, we don't believe what we see because we have constructs and ideas and beliefs, and we search for what's going to validate that. We see what we believe. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. This comes from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. In quantum mechanics, as well as in the brain, the question you ask influences the outcome you see. A well-verified law is called the quantum Zeno effect. The mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. Consistent focus then rewires the brain. So use this law to help you write your book. You'll begin to see more of what you want to write about. And finally, the last, in homage to my mom, believe in someone and he or she will show you why you do. Think about that. It's what I believe. It's the assumption I have with every client I work with. I have to believe in them in order to work with them, but I know that when I do, they're going to show both of us why. Neuroscience has demonstrated, and this is so important. I want you to hear this, but I'm closing with this, but I think it's so important. Neuroscience has demonstrated that authentic belief in someone activates that person's brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. Think about that. Authentic belief in someone activates the other person's brain to create a state of mind to transcend usual thinking and performance. Now, that person can be you. Okay, we're in conversation mode. I'm interested to hear thoughts, questions, anything that would be helpful for us to talk about. What you got,
Dave? Well, Dave, this is Michael again.
Hey, yeah, go ahead.
Going back early, when you're talking about framing, it strikes me that, in a sense, what you're talking about is priming the brain to pay attention to specific things, and that when you prime the brain to do that, the topics that you're interested in will suddenly, you know, appear because your brain is attuned to listen to them, and you can prime your brain to believe in yourself. When you got to talking about the states of mind, frankly, you lost me. I just ended up being confused about this. Like, just to go to the very last thing you said about, well, you can remind me of this statement, but essentially the state of, you entered into a state of mind that transcends usual thinking. Well, what does that mean? What is the state of mind that transcends usual thinking? And how is that useful?
Well, a simple analogy is think about when you were in a creative flow and ideas came to you and you were in that performance flow and you didn't think about it, you didn't think about thinking, you just were in the flow and things came to you and you did not disrupt that and you transcended what you usually do, which is the definition of creativity, to get to a new place, a new synthesis, a new integration, and you wrote something you didn't plan to write. You transcended what you usually do. Think about another example. You're working with a client, and both of you are in that co-created space where you're getting beyond where the client is imagined, because they can only imagine from their own vision, but they're transcending that, and you're co-creating something that neither of you have quite done before or couldn't quite imagine, but you're doing it together. And you believe in the process, you believe in that person, and you're thinking about that, so you're in the flow so that it's like leapfrogging along. Do those examples kind of make, because I'll bet you've had the experience over and over again, and I'm just thinking of a way to sort of concretize and capture this in words in a linear way, something that's not linear at all. Does this make sense to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly I think all of us have experienced the flow state. The question is, how do we get into the flow state when we need to, and when is that going to be useful in our writing? You talked about the three-step combination of visualization, affirmations, and then change the behavior that you want. I'm not clear how that can be directed specifically to, say, get into a flow state, or conversely, to get into an editing state of mind, which, you know, would be a sort of a different kind of state
okay.
of mind.
Let me give two quick examples of framing, and then talk about how the framing will establish your creative state.
Okay.
Conversational intelligence. From neuroscience, we know the first words that someone says boots up a particular state that will frame the remainder of the conversation. If those words are about connection and trust and collaboration, it boots up a state that's mediated by oxytocin, the bonding chemical of connection. If someone's first few words are words that are perceived as pejorative or critical or challenging or wondering if you can trust it, it boosts up an entirely different neurochemical system, and everything is processed on the basis of how it starts. And another simple example that will get closer to an application, from appreciative inquiry. Dr. David Copywriter did a number of studies in a number of organizations. When you ask about a problem, you build up a problem mindset. That's the usual consultancy model. When you ask about possibilities, which is exactly what we do in coaching, you build up an entirely different kind of mindset individually and conversation collectively. So the question then is, what do you do to get in the mindset, the frame of what you do to write optimally? Now, it's easy for me when I'm in the Creole cottage and the courtyard, because that's all I do. I'm surrounded by the books. I'm surrounded by my dictaphone. It's what I do, because I still work with my clients, but I don't do other stuff. That's it. And I'm in that flow. I do it for weekends at my ranch, when, you know, my favorite time of the day is dusk. I'll get on my porch and my two favorite riding companions, a cigar and single malt, and I get immersed in the flow of what I'm writing about, what I'm thinking about. Sometimes it may be being stimulated by somebody else who I consider an excellent thinker or has some great ideas, and then I'll take off on that. But it's setting whatever works for you for that flow and that immersion in what you want to do. and just not having any interruptions. It's easier for a change of context. It's easier for me to do that, not sitting here in my office. But it's not a prerequisite. You know, you can do it however you do it. Maybe sitting outside, you know, during the weekends, and I sit by the pool. That works just as well. So create a setting that you can get immersed in that flow and that experience of doing it. Do any of the others of you have something that you found that works that may not even sound like anything I've mentioned? And I'll bet, Michael, you have some experiences of doing it that you can reflect on and see what works. Because that's the simple model that we have in coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. Right. Are there things that you've done that work, Michael?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends on what you mean.
Specifically and simply what that is.
Well, like you say, sitting down and having a strict routine where every morning, I find, you know, that I write better in the morning than I do in the afternoon. So sitting down and disciplining myself and writing for 2 hours in the morning. I do many of the research things that you know, talk about. So there's stimulation from reading. But what you're implying is, I think, or what you were suggesting to me is that there are different states of mind that are needed for different types of writing. And I'm looking for help in, you know, I can do trial and error and figure it out for myself, but yeah. I was kind of hoping you had, you know, more of a system that you could say, okay, for editing, here's how you get into that state of mind, and for rewriting, you know, or for the creative intuitive stuff, that's a different state of mind than when you're doing research. So,
well, that's true. And reading a bunch of articles or papers that you've copied so that you can do it all in one sitting, that may be different than reading a book that you get. But the idea is you're working on one thing, you're in the flow of that writing, and you're looking at different sources and different ideas and putting together whatever is in front of you or what you're thinking about into that flow, so you're synthesizing and integrating and looking at things. And remember, a first draft is a first draft. You're saying some stuff, and you're writing some stuff or recording some. You're saying some stuff that you may not like later, but it's still in the flow because there's no telling where you'll get to. So stay with it. Stay immersed in the process for those 2 hours. You know what you're working on, what aspect of that, what you're going to be thinking and feeling and immersed in. You're going to know what may stimulate you for that particular topic. It may be reading something or reading a number of things. You know, for certain things about, let's say, resilience or grit. You know, I may have looked at things like Angela Duckworth's grit. I may look at a bunch of Navy SEAL. Just a whole number of things that kind of are in that flow, because I'm going to distill what I want that applies to what I'm talking about. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. I know we're over time. And thank you. I didn't notice that. It's dark in here except for my iPhone. Remember, we have no heat lighter. So if there are any questions or any comments, please feel free to email me. I will look at them within a day or two when we get power, and I'll be happy to incorporate them in our discussion next time. So we're going to talk about next time the business of writing, the aspects of what you do and where you get to when you have a book manuscript. So I look forward to that. Thanks very much for all of your comments and questions. I appreciate that. It helps me to shape some of my comments. Thanks very much. Have a great rest of the week, guys. See you now.
Bye-bye.